Hey, before we get started today, I got to read you a comment that came in from one of our listeners. She said, I realized listening today that it was shame that I've been feeling my whole life. This broadcast just nailed it on the head. I've spent my whole life trying to find love and acceptance. And after hearing this show, it just made so much sense. God does love me. When Ann said the line, you're already loved, I cried. I said, that's for me. I'm already loved.
I'm telling you, it's when people are impacted like that, that makes me cry, because that's our hope, that people will meet Jesus and be helped.
I mean, that's why we do what we do. I think that's what all of us want. We want to make a difference. We want to leave a mark. Mm-hmm. And family life's all about leaving a mark and helping you leave a mark. And let me tell you, we have a goal, a financial goal in the month of August, so that we can leave a mark and you can leave a mark. And you won't believe this. The goal is $250,000.
But we think we can do it. So we're asking, will you help us reach that goal?
Yeah, jump in with us at any level. FamilyLifeToday.com is where you can do that and become a partner. If you jump in with us, we can make a mark in your life, and you and I can make a mark on all kinds of people for legacies and generations to come. And guess what? If you jump in with us in August, we're going to send you Brant Hansen's book, Unoffendable.
And
a pen, a Family Life limited edition pen, you know, make a mark. That's what pens do. And you're going to use it to just carve up through Brant's book. It's
so good.
Crazy great book. But let me just say this. We need you. We love you. We want to partner together. And when you and we partner together, we can change the world. So let's jump in together today.
How do you get out of a country that is overseen by a totalitarian theocracy? How do you escape? Do you bribe everybody? Do you just go to the airport? And, you know, we did. We went to an airport sort of in some ways knowing we were going to get, you know, flagged.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Shelby Abbott, and your hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. You can find us at FamilyLifeToday.com.
This is Family Life Today.
I have never read a book quite like this. This was an exciting, exciting read, and we've got the author in here. Listen to this. Everything sad is untrue, but it's a true story.
Right.
About our author sitting right here.
This is going to be super fun today.
Yeah, Daniel Nereri is with us. And I read this out loud to Ann.
Yeah, he did.
When we got the book, I'm like, oh, listen to this. This grabs you. Our books never grab anybody, but yours, it says, all Persians are liars and lying is a sin. That's what the kids in Mrs. Miller's class think, but I'm the only Persian they've ever met, so I don't know where they got that idea. I mean, that's the opening paragraph. You are a writer, dude.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's sort of playing with this idea. I mean, anytime you have a character who's trying to tell you this big story, and some of it is really grand and has all kinds of what you'd call coincidences or miracles or whatever, he's sort of immediately trying to address the skepticism of somebody who's just not going to believe it. And so he says, all right, well, everybody thinks I'm a liar, but I don't know what to tell you. It's what happened.
Well, I mean, in some ways, as I've heard your story and reading it and been then watching you on YouTube do interviews,
yeah,
they really did think you were lying about your story. Right.
Well, yeah, and as a kid, it totally makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it opens with a young boy who's in the sixth grade standing up in front of his classroom and trying to explain what life was like back in Iran, right?
And this is your life memoir.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. And
yeah.
So, and anytime I would stand there, like, you know, admittedly, we were fairly poor when we came to Oklahoma. I dressed in like Sam's Club sweats, and I thought it was cool if you do the matching top and bottom.
Like pajamas?
Yeah, like pajamas. I didn't know. Someone should have labeled it at Sam's Club, pajamas, not for school. And then my social life wouldn't have taken such a hit. But so, you know, you have a kid standing there in like one color Sam's sweats going, we used to have a house with a pool and an aviary in the middle where every wall was glass and you could look in and see the tropical birds. And my father's father had orchards and great land out in the outskirts of Isfahan. And Isfahan is an ancient city from the Silk Road where, you know, the great Arabian Nights tales happen. And you can imagine. imagine a kid's going to like, yeah, sure. You know, I think you saw that in a video game called Prince of Persia and for sure made that up. You are. And I was the poor refugee kid. So I completely understand, you know, anyone's skepticism. And I think when you tell a story, especially when you tell a story with a kind of wistfulness that a kid does, I'm like, well, my father was there and my grandfather was there. And you don't, I mean, every kid kind of says, you know, my dad can beat up your dad. But, you know, there's that kind of heroism that we see our fathers and grandfathers with. And when that gets seeped into the story, all of a sudden he's a larger than life figure. And my dad memorizes poetry and he's a great dentist. Everyone in Isfahan agrees he's the greatest dentist there. And it's like, well, maybe he is. I mean, he's a good dentist, I'm certain. But, you know,
your mom was a doctor.
That's right. Yeah, she was. And so, you know, all those little fishtail exaggerations maybe are also a part of it. And I completely admit that. That's what happens when a kid is trying to remember like a home that was at that time, you know, complete and whole. And that was that. So it all kind of comes together in that. And then you're, you know, fast forward to your cafeteria and he's saying all this and the kids, the fastest response is like, yeah, okay. Yeah. we don't believe it. So
but we are all drawn to great stories.
Yeah.
That's why, as Dave and I were reading it and looking at your book, we're like, man, our listeners are going to love this great story.
Thank you.
Of life change, and you're such a good storyteller, you know? You. So this is really fun. What
yeah,
a fun
so take
journey.
Us back. I mean, obviously, we're...
Take us back to that little boy.
We're in Oklahoma sure. now, but even yeah. though pre-Oklahoma.
Well, so the reason it starts there is because, as I said, when you're standing in front of a classroom and you're trying to express, so like the fundamental question, which is, okay, so you're this little refugee from Iran. Why did you come here? The question is always why, right? Mm. And you say, well, we came here because we were refugees and we got asylum because a wonderful family in Edmond, Oklahoma, sponsored us. And you say, okay, so then why were you refugees? And you say, well, we were refugees because my mother converted from Islam to Christianity. And that's a capital crime in Iran, which means if you're captured and found guilty of apostasy in the Islamic courts, then you'll be put to death. And you're like, okay, well, why did she commit a capital crime?
Right there.
Right.
Aren't kids like, I'm assuming that people, their jaws are kind of open and what?
Right. There's also a lot of questions. Because just the every noun I just said requires some
yes.
explanation. Wait, Islamic courts? It's like, well, yeah, it's a theocracy over there, which means there are both legal courts and theological courts. And you can be found guilty of religious crimes. And so you're kind of explaining a lot. You find yourself in that position where you're telling the story and you say, okay, well, then why did she do that? And you say, well... That's a bigger question. Why did she, commit this crime? It's like, well, she'd been captured by the secret police and they told her that they wanted to know the names of all the people in the underground church where she was attending or they would kill her and her kids. It's like, well, why? And you're like, okay, let me go back. She joined the underground church because she had converted when we as a family had gone to the United Kingdom in order to attend a wedding. And it's like, well, why did you go to this? You know, and you go, okay, well, I have to back up a little bit. So my grandmother, who's my mother's mother, was exiled to the UK because, you know, she had divorced from her husband, which was my grandfather. And with her went her youngest daughter, which is my mom's youngest sister, my youngest aunt. She grows up. She wants to get married. Normal thing to do. So we go to attend. And now my mother, who at that time was a very devout Muslim, she was a Quranic scholar. She was on the side of the, you know, a lot of people think we came here because a lot of Persians came here after the revolution. And they were because they, you know, there was an Islamic revolution in the 70s. My mother was on the side of the revolution. She actually was very, very devout. And so when we go to the United Kingdom, you know, it's a Christian nation. They're going to get married in a church. They had converted to Christianity. And so my mother at first was very, hostile to that notion. And she was kind of, you know, a standoffish, I guess you'd say, with the church. And the idea is, okay, we're going to attend the wedding, but no, nothing more. And we were there for a long time. It wasn't just for the wedding. We were there for about 6 weeks, I think, in order to help, in order to just have a family reunion. You know, my mother's mother's there, her sister, all that stuff. And so... So while we're there, you know, quite a few things happen. And this is a category in the book. There are moments where you go, here's a moment where you don't have to believe in miracles. But then I'm just going to tell you a bunch of coincidental things that happen. Mm. And we can just chalk it up to that if you like. But yeah, there was a daycare center where, you know, we were, as they were sort of helping with the wedding, my sister was going to the daycare. And then there was a little boy there who, you know, who knows why little kids do anything. But he had sort of decided that he's going to trick her. He sort of says, hey, stick your finger in this little door jamb. And my sister, fairly gullible thing to do, she does, sticks her pinky in there and he slams the door and it severs the finger. And it's just this horrible injury, this kind of thing that happens. My mother rushes to the hospital. Everything's fine. They sew it back on. It's just, you know, scary and traumatic. And
everything's fine. They sew her finger back on.
It's the tip. Yeah. Let's not get crazy here. I don't know how many times you've really been saved by the tip of your pinky. I'm not sure. Your dad attached.
I mean, would it have happened if your mom wasn't a doctor? Did she put it in ice immediately?
She put it in ice immediately. And I think everybody would probably think to put it in ice. Where else would you put it?
Okay, well, keep going.
A pocket would be a terrible place for a pinky. So she's forever has lint in there. It's weird. I've come back and it's the return that's important because my grandmother, her apartment, we were sort of staying there and my sister goes, you know, they put her in my grandma's bed and just like, you know, she's kind of in that post, you know, traumatic lull and she takes, you know, they're just going to have her take a nap and we're all in the living room and, you know, not 30 minutes later, she comes back out and she's this sort of happy child, as the story goes. And everyone's kind of wondering what's happened. Is the, you know, the emotional elasticity of a child so good that she's bounced back already here?
Yeah.
Or is she? And so everyone's like, hey, you know, how you doing? What's going on? And she sort of describes this moment that, you know, everybody still wonders about because she says, well, there was this man in my room and he was sitting at the corner of my bed and he said that everything's going to be okay and that I'm his now. And she just proceeds to describe him more. And one of the reasons this is sort of odd is, you know, of course, here in the States or anywhere in the West, we have a lot of just images of Jesus. We've seen these images and wherever on posters and people's living rooms, you know, we kind of have a sense of the iconographic Jesus, even on a crucifix. That's not how you're raised in Iran, right? Iran is not a Christian nation, and those images aren't everywhere. And so for a little kid to make this description, it felt fairly authentic. And so my grandmother, who was a Christian, said, you know, you're just, that sounds exactly like Jesus. That's, you know, that sounds, and she goes, okay, well, I'm a Christian now. And so, famously, my sister is very precocious, very smart, very stubborn. And so my mother has this sudden realization that we're about to go back to Muslim Iran, where there's a secret police, where the environment is that teachers would sometimes hold up pictures of whiskey bottles and ask if anybody recognized this, because, of course, alcohol is illegal in Iran. And if any child raised their hand because they had presumably seen that bottle at home, the secret police would raid their home by the afternoon, right? Mm. So you're talking about a very intense totalitarian state. It's not the kind of place where a six-year-old can, like, skip around and tell a story about her finger and Jesus and that now she's thinking about being a Christian. Like, none of those are good moves. But then what it really kicks off is this force that my mother now can't be standoffish with that church. She's not just going to attend. Now she's got to kind of attend to this. She's got to deal with it. And when she does, by that I mean quite literally, she has to, like, read the Bible and say, okay, well, what is my grandmother doing? What is happening?
Yeah.
And so when she reads it, one of the things she always describes is that a lucky factor in her life was that she had done all that reading of the Quran, because there are plenty of people who just are culturally what they are, whether that be Muslim or Christian or whatever they are. That's just the world they're in. That's the culture. They don't know exactly what the specifics are of their faith. And so sometimes you can have these moments where you'll tell someone, especially a Muslim, you can tell them about Christ, and they'll be like, yeah, he's a good teacher. We venerate him too.
Yeah.
And you go, right, I understand that, but there's a difference that makes a difference here. And for her, that was a very, very clear difference as she was reading that Bible. Mm. And so she converted during that time, specifically because as she's reading it, she's making that comparison and contrasting it and saying, this is the truth. I'm seeing it. And so we returned to Iran at that point from that wedding. And as I said, that was the inciting incident, because now we're back and she's, you know, meeting up with a missionary there, helping, you know.
This is a big deal.
Yeah. So she has this
big deal.
And she knew how big a deal it was
in Iran,
right?
She did. Although my mom, you know, I tell people, like, she's about as tall as a house plant. Like, she's a very, very small woman. But also, I've seen her, like, outwork, like, college students. Like, one time we were all moving me somewhere, and all my college buddies, tough, big guys, you know, by lunchtime, they're sitting around that pizza, exhausted. My mom is still just going back and forth. Like, she's a toughie. And
that would be her.
Yeah, right.
That and would she's be smart. Her. She's a physician.
I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So even though she knew about that danger, but one episode I always talk about is because she was also so zealous and, like, completely unafraid in what might be, from the world's perspective, considered a reckless way. She just, like, put a cross up hanging from her rearview mirror.
Come on.
Which is nuts. It's a nuts thing to do.
Yes.
And she was at the market one day, and there was someone scrawled on something, you know, and put on her car, "If I ever see this cross again, I'll kill you." You know, it was like just this kind of really aggressive thing to see, the kind of thing that, you know, most people would just sort of take it down. Why? Like, it's not worth it. Just go to the market, get your eggs and come back. And she did take it down, and she put up a bigger one.
Really? Yeah. This says everything we need to know about your mom.
Right, yeah. And I was like, I would never do that. Like, I'm like four times her size. I would still just kind of, you know, caution might prevail, but that's not what she was up to. She was, you know, she was going to job interviews as a doctor for this hospital, and, like, witnessing to the interviewer, which is, again, in a city that is kind of being run by the secret police, which have the most ominous name in the world. They're called the Committee. The Comité.
The Committee.
Yeah, the Committee. And if you get brought before the Committee, there is no desk between you. It's not a well-lit interviewing space. So it's just such a terrifying panopticon. Like, everybody is telling on everybody. If you're throwing out beer bottles in the trash, the neighbor ladies might all of a sudden see it. And all of a sudden, again, that night, you might get raided. Like, it's such a tight and fear controlled environment, and for her to kind of do those fearless things always has always been a really
what is your dad thinking?
Oh, he thinks she's gone crazy.
He does.
Yeah, he's a Sufi. He's a type of Muslim. Sufis, for those Sufi is the sort of the mystical tradition of Islam. They're like hippie Muslims. Like,
that's the best way to describe it.
I mean, Rumi, the famous poet, was a Sufi. There's a great emphasis and incredible poetry. And I think a really beautiful tradition of sort of reveling in the majesty of the Lord, and also kind of a very strong tradition of fear of the Lord. So a lot of, you know, interesting philosophers and writers have come out of the Sufi tradition. But my dad is what you might call kind of a, you know, light on all this stuff, and very much a pragmatist, not a religious man. And so, I mean, he has... every single time I've ever spoken to him on the phone, said, "Religion has ruined my life. Your mother didn't need to do any of this." And to jump to that moment, she, you know, one day she's in that market again, and some unmarked, you know, men in you know, not in uniform, pull up in a van and throw her in, and
the committee showed up.
Yeah, and they took her to a safe house and started to interrogate her, and told her, of course, that what I said, which is that we want the names of the underground church, or we'll kill you and your kids. And they basically just kicked her out of the safe house for her to walk home. And people always ask, like, well, why didn't they keep her in custody? And I go back to, this is a city that's on lockdown at all times. Like, they know where she lives. They know where she is.
And was the underground church at that time growing?
It was, yeah. So Isfahan is a city that is a fascinating place, because there's a city within a city, kind of like Vatican and Rome.
Yeah.
There's a city called Julfa in Isfahan. And Julfa is traditionally an Armenian cultural city space. They've always been allowed, because they've been there for so many years, and they're traditionally Christian. And they've been there for so many years that they're kind of, you know, they're allowed, they're part of the, you know, there's obviously attacks, there's obviously, like, social separation in those ways. And if any of them are ever discovered proselytizing, like, they have wonderful bakeries there. And if for some reason some Muslim is, like, buying some cookies and then going, "Hey, you want to tell me about your faith?" Like, Nope, that is not kind of the kind of conversation we can have. And if you do have it, you're going to prison, right? So, but that, what that meant was there were, you know, in a country that's 96% Muslim, you know, the other 4% is not Christian. I think it's 0.7% Christian, last I checked. So a very, very small percentage Christian. There was still a population of them in the city where my mother was. And there was a missionary who was... you know, supported out of a church in New York City who was there. They were just sort of beginning an underground movement. And so when that happened that day where my mother kind of is given that ultimatum and that threat, I enter the scene when my dad picks me up from kindergarten and we come home and my mother is, you know, this is a loaded term, but accurate for the moment. Like, she is absolutely hysterical. Like, she is... doesn't know what to put in a suitcase and doesn't know what to, where to go. It doesn't even know how it's going to happen. And so there begins another series of miracles that I'll sort of leave for the book. But effectively, it's a lot of logistics. It's a lot of like, how do you get out of a country that is overseen by a totalitarian theocracy? How do you escape? Do you bribe everybody? Do you just go to the airport? And, you know, we did. We went to an airport sort of in some ways knowing we were going to get, you know, flagged. And eventually, you know, that was this moment where I realized as a young child that, like, oh, my father has no real interest in this situation. He's staying and we're leaving. And so I didn't even understand divorce at that point. I thought my dad was like going to come later when he sold our house or something. And
let me ask you, we've got like a minute left.
Oh, goodness.
As a little boy, were you scared?
Yeah, I used to sleep under my bed for a long time because I thought that would trick the people who ran into my room.
So your mom's fear and some of the things that of getting you guys out, you felt it as a child.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's an adventurous quality of seeing new places and things like that. But fundamentally, yeah, I had always assumed there were, and in a kid's mind, it's like the bad men are after me, right? It's that sort of thing. So I was very keen on trying to get strong, get good at self-defense, you know, hide properly and well. So, that would be a part of the childhood.
I'm Shelby Abbott, and you've been listening to David Ann Wilson with Daniel Neri on Family Life Today. Yeah, you can obviously be captivated by a story like Daniel's, but if you want to learn more, if you want to read more about what actually happened with him, you can read his book, Everything Sad is Untrue, A True Story. You can get your copy right now by going online to familylifetoday.com or finding a link in the show notes. Or feel free to give us a call at 800-358-6329 to request your copy. Again, that number is 800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Isn't it amazing how God works in families? It's just so incredible. The stories that get told about how God works by bringing people into the context of families in order to see life change happen. And that's what we really believe in here at Family Life. We are dedicated to reaching families and making every home a godly home. And if that's something that you resonate with or you've been impacted by Family Life today, I just really encourage you to partner with us. Jump in, link arms with us, and become a financial supporter. Our goal in the month of August this year is to raise $250,000 in new funds by the end of the month. And we'd love it if you would be part of the solution with us. When you do, when you make a donation of any amount, we're going to send you a limited edition Family Life pen along with a copy of Brant Hansen's Unoffendable. It's just a small way to say thank you so much for partnering with us and making the ministry of Family Life possible. Again, you can head online to familylifetoday.com to make your donation, or you can give us a call at 800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Now, tomorrow, Daniel Neri is back to talk about his journey from Iran to Oklahoma as God used it to highlight his faith, build resilience in him, and discover that really there can be kindness in strangers. That's coming up tomorrow. We hope you'll join us. On behalf of David Ann Wilson, I'm Shelby Abbott. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.